and serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
Amen. Simple Actions Group wishes to extend a warm welcome to all in attendance today. These premises are non-smoking. Our group is welcome to use this room and the restrooms exclusively. Newcomers, is there anyone here in their first 30 days of sobriety? We would like to welcome you. On Zoom, you can always raise your hand and somebody will chat with you.
Hey, Steve. Steve, welcome.
Hey, Nick.
Welcome.
Is there anybody visiting from out of town or new to the meeting? All right. At this time, please silence your cell phones. Also, we respectfully ask that those present please refrain from unnecessary moving around the room. This will keep distractions and disturbances to a minimum and allow everyone to listen uninterrupted. This is the foreword to the book Alcoholics Anonymous. We of Alcoholics Anonymous are more than 100 men and women who have recovered from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. To show other alcoholics precisely how we have recovered is the main purpose of this book. For them, we hope these pages will prove so convincing that no further authentication will be necessary. We think this account of our experiences will help everyone to better understand the alcoholic. Many do not comprehend that the alcoholic is a very sick person. And besides, we are sure that our way of living has its advantages for all. It is the purpose of this meeting to carry that clear message and to focus on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism by taking AA's simple actions. The format of this meeting is an open big book step study. As a group, we recognize the power of one alcoholic identifying with another alcoholic, sharing their experience, strength, and hope from the book Alcoholics Anonymous. This evening, we're going to be discussing step 11. Please welcome our panel. We've got Donald and Willie. And I believe Donald is going to kick us off tonight. And our first reading is going to be on page 85. Step 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood him, praying only for knowledge of his will for us and the power to carry that out. Right on 85. Step 11 suggests prayer and meditation. We shouldn't be shy on this matter of prayer. Better men than we are using it constantly. It works if we have the proper attitude and work at it. It would be easy to be vague about this matter. Yet, we believe we can make some definite and valuable suggestions. When we retire at night, we constructively review our day. Were we resentful, selfish, dishonest, or afraid? Do we owe an apology? Have we kept something to ourselves which should be discussed with another person at once? Were we kind and loving toward all? What could we have done better? Were we thinking of ourselves most of the time? Or were we thinking of what we could do for others, of what we could pack into the stream of life? But we must be careful not to drift into worry, remorse, or morbid reflection, for that would diminish our usefulness to others. After making our review, we ask God's forgiveness and inquire what corrective measures should be taken.
Donald Smith, alcoholic.
Donald.
My home group is the West Kenton Group of Alcoholics Anonymous. We meet on Wednesday nights at 8 o'clock at the St. Andrew's Church on off of Princess Anne Road. My sobriety date is October 17th, 1994. And thank you, Amy, for inviting me. Appreciate it. And everybody for coming too. At least nobody ran out of the room. You know, kind of what I'd like to do first is for me, I kind of review where I am with this step, because to me, this step has always been like it's the culmination of all 10 steps. It's what I do on a daily basis. This 12th step says that I practice these principles in all my affairs. And for me, this is how I do it. Practice these principles in all my affairs by working this particular step. As we see, we lay out here. But, you know, I'll say this real quick too. I've had 4 different sponsors. And when I first started getting into the book, I was about 4 or 5 years sober. before that, I had gotten, my sponsor put me through the book using the 12 and 12. And it was, it worked for a while, but it just didn't stick, you know. And I kind of got the opinion at that point, you know, that God doesn't care what I do. God cares that I do. But at some point, being a chronic alcoholic, if you will, I have to get a spiritual answer. And I just wasn't getting that out of the 12 and 12. I know some people love it and they use it a lot. That's fine. It didn't work for me for long-term sobriety, but I got into the big book and it changed my life, changed the way I looked at the steps, changed everything. So I also used to go to all of these different, back in the way, I guess maybe 10, 15 years ago, they used to have these types of big book workshops. I think you all had one a few years back. But they would come in, these two speakers would come in on a Friday night, tell their story, and then Saturday and Sunday we would spend going through the book. I used to go through I have a ton of those at home. I have tapes. I can't even play them anymore. But I got all that stuff, and I listened to it, and I learned from it, and I tried to apply what I learned in these workshops. So I've had sponsors, and so I'm not going to tell you. I will say most of the stuff I'm going to say tonight is my experience and how I was able to go through this stuff. And I don't have a whole lot of time, so I'll be.
You got all night, Don.
Oh, boy. Should have never said that. Anyway, you know, step one and two for me are like consideration steps. Am I an alcoholic? What does that mean? When I start drinking, I don't stop. And when I try to stop, I can't stay stopped. That's part one, or the first part of step one. The second part is I have a spiritual malady. Once I that my life has become unmanageable. And that part is the part that is the most important for me. Even though I realize that that AA, from my experience, that AA says that once you start, you can't stop. And once you stop, you can't stay stopped. That's in the We Agnostics. But it also says later on in We Agnostics that the lack of power is my dilemma. And that's the spiritual side of the program. And so I can have all this self-knowledge about who I am and what I've done and all these things. I just can't implement any of it because I don't have the power to do it. And that's an important piece for me to know. And it took me a long time to get there, to completely give up. And so then also in step three, it talks about, and so on page 62, where it says selfishness, there's a dash and it says self-centeredness. And it says, that's the root of my trouble, blah, 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 blah. So when I was coming up, if there was a dash, you had two separate thoughts. You were tying together with that dash. It's in the first step. So selfishness is the way I was when I was drinking. I mean, that was clear, right? But self-centered is how I am without a drink in me. If I'm not living in untreated alcoholism, I'm living in, I'm okay. I've gotten some recovery, but I keep trying to do these things. You know, I'm taking control of my life all the time. I slip over I'm self-centered. I can't see past my nose a lot of times. So for me, doing 11 is about doing that. I'm sorry, doing that means taking care of the self-centeredness that I have, all right? My natural self-centeredness. And also, so this all, what we just read when I retire at night, I haven't done this in probably a year, maybe a little bit more, but I used to do it all the time when I was going to, we were going out to Indian Creek Correctional Facility and going, taking a meeting out to the people out there at the jail. Well, I did it all the time because I didn't want to go out there and be a hypocrite and tell people that I was doing something that I wasn't. So I made sure I did inventory every night, written inventory. Now I have done it every night in my head. I just don't write about it much anymore. I do, but the wonderful thing about doing it that often is that when it does pop up, I know what to do. I've got everything I need. I just boom and I just do it. So when it says I review my night, was I resentful, selfish, dishonest, or afraid? You know, the book says that in inventory, it says we had to get down to causes and conditions. So the cause to me is either the person or how I'm feeling about what the person said, that type of thing. It's all that column three stuff. If you've done inventory, it's that column three stuff. Person, what they did, how I felt about it. That's the cause. But my condition is my, I am naturally, I don't know about you all, but I am naturally resentful. I'm naturally selfish. I just talked about that. I'm naturally dishonest. You know, I love, you know, I shouldn't talk so much.
No, you're good. Keep.
Real quick. I love telling a story that just a little bit better than what actually happened. I call it embellishment, you know. But if it was three, four sounds so much better, right? I'm afraid my condition is that way. I can't tell you how many times I get up in the morning. I tell my sponsor, I've got anxiety. And he'd tell me, well, Donald, you have a $10 word for a four letter problem. And for the longest time, I didn't know what the hell he was talking about. What does that mean? And finally I found out, and by doing inventory every night, I found out, and I'll have to stop there because I want to give Willie some time to talk. That's all I have on my notes here.
Thank you.
My name's Willie. I'm an alcoholic. I didn't take any notes. I said a little prayer that God would talk through me before we came here. Hope you was awake when I said it. My sobriety date's 9/1/17. My home group's Saturday night special. I'm going to give them a little plug here. If you're hungry and bored on Saturday night, we're having our own version of supper and a speaker. Eating starts 5:45. We're having a speaker at 7. That's on Centerville Road. When I first got here, they said some stuff like, you can do any step with a one in it from the time you get here. I was like, what does that mean? They said, well, step one, don't drink. I said, okay. You know, step 10, if you're wrong, you know, admit it or apologize. Or step 11, pray. No. You know, I grew up in a Catholic church, you know, on my knees, they're pounding this stuff into me. And like, I was not doing it because I had my own prejudice about it. Like, it just was not going to happen. And step 12, they told me go to meetings. So that was my first start when I first got here. But by the time we actually get to step 11, we've done a little work, you know. In my head, and this is my experience, step 10 and 11 work together. I've done up to 9 to get to this point. In there, I've developed some sort of relationship with some sort of higher power, you know. I've done certain things. I've seen certain things happen in my life. I've seen a lot happen in you guys' lives, like unexplainable, don't know why it happened. Coincidences, my sponsor calls them God incidences, you know. But I could see like the results of you guys doing this. But, you know, in step 10, I like this because it's, you know, the way they work together, step 10 in my head is real time. That's like as I'm speaking right now, I should be taking inventory. And where it says, continue to watch for selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, fear. When these crop up, that means it's going to happen. And then it tells you to go ahead and inventory and talk to someone if you have to. And you know, ask God to remove whatever fear or whatever you have. And it's real time. And then I get step 11. That's for the stuff I missed during the day, you know. When I review my day, like, oh, damn, I was an ass, you know, like, please help me. I was never much, the meditation I grew up on, I grew up wrestling, you know. Meditation was, to me, was like when you sit in a sauna and you have a trash bag on and you think through a wrestling match 2 weeks out ahead, you know, every move, the way my reaction to it and that sort of stuff. As I got older, that became like a problem for me because, like, I would have these ideas, and then we would have the whole conversation in my head about a week before I even said hello to you, and I knew how it was going to turn out, and this is how I was going to answer to you, and this and that. And that never worked out for me because, you know, I go up with all these, you know, with my
on my arms getting ready to fire and stuff, and people were like, hey, how you doing? I'd be like, that's not the way it was supposed to go, you know, because I had these, you know, preempted thoughts of the way everything in this world was going to work out. So when I first started doing this, and I, like Donald said, written inventory, I was told to write this down. And at first, this is the way it went for me. It says, were we resentful, selfish, dishonest, or afraid? Yes. Do we owe an apology? Probably. Have we kept something to ourselves which should be discussed with another person at once? Yeah. Were we kind and loving towards all? I did the best I could. What could we have done better? A lot. Were we thinking of ourselves most of the time? Of course. Or were we thinking of what we could do for others? A couple times. But we must be careful not to drift into worry, remorse, or morbid reflection. And in my mind, that is all morbid reflection. You know? I think even for a non-alcoholic, it is hard to go through the day and not answer those questions the way I just answered them. So I'm writing this down, and I'm calling a sponsor, and, you know, I'm talking about it, and, you know, I'm praying, you know, to ask God for what corrective measures I should take. And after a couple months of it, I was like, man, this sucks, man, because I looked like a bad person the way I was doing it. And at this point, this is where it was pointed out to me that there is such a thing as good inventory. And I was like, what's good about it? And I kept these things. They were like, I guess it was about 4 or 5 months into it. They said, take the one you did today. I said, okay. And they said, well, take the one you did when you first started doing this. I said, okay. They said, put them side by side. And I did. They said, what do you see? It's like, well, the one today is a lot shorter. You know? Like, they were like, that's good inventory. I said, what do you mean? They were like, well, if you don't have as much to write about in your day, that's good inventory. That, you know, my buddy back there says, in theory, we're supposed to be getting better. And when I looked at it that way, through just taking these actions, through doing the things this book tells me to do, I could see where improvement was made. You know, that doesn't mean I get to stop doing it, because I am still in here. I am one that believes that my character defects don't get removed, just the ones that stand in my way to the helpfulness of others. At other times, God lets them up to me to watch out for. You know, most of my amends today are for stuff like not what I said, but the way I said it. You know, because I will fly out, I will be right, I will snap in a minute. And, you know, it teaches me through this book. First of all, to take it, inventory must be important, because they make me do it about 4 or 5 times, you know. And then when I get here, they say, keep doing it. God, if it ain't broke, don't fix it, basically. But when I start, the first honest prayer I had when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous was when I sat around in here for about 80 days. I put the drink down. The real problem showed up. I was ready to kill myself worse than I ever was when I couldn't stop drinking. And I refused to pray. And at one night, I was sitting out on my front porch smoking a cigarette, and I looked up, and it was like clear. There was like a billion stars. I was like, huh. You know, they told me in high school that every one of them stars is like our sun, and it has planets and moons and asteroids. I wonder what the hell keeps all that crap from crashing into each other. And I honestly said, hey, you, how about a little help with this obsession thing? That was it. And then about 3 weeks later, I was, you know, still doing the thing, going to meetings every day, this and that. Someone came up to me and was like, hey, man, when's the last time you thought about a drink? And I was like, oh, crap. And that was my start. That was my start of my relationship with God. Today, I mean, I could just keep talking about step 11. I think they got 4 more things to read here that I can probably fit it in there when I keep talking. But this has become a pretty important part of my day. You know, the time I spend with God, higher power, I don't care what you call it, whatever you're talking to, grab hold of something. It's not up to us, like, what or if anything's listening. But in my experience, something must be, because I can see results from it in others, in me, in others. Like, It's just amazing. I like that Donald brought up step three. I like the beginning of step three. They read how it works, and then it says, you know, I'm an alcoholic, can't manage my own lives. No human power can relieve my alcoholism, and God could and would if he were sought. And I was like, what is sought? I looked up a lot of definitions. I burned up three phones going definition of. And I looked up sought, and I said past tense of seek. So, you know, if I seek God, my alcoholism will get relieved. And then it says, being convinced, I'm at step three. You know, first thing I did was worst step one and two. You know, I'm flipping through the book. But when I got that, what am I convinced of at that point? I am convinced of those ABCs. That is what being convinced is about. So I am convinced that the alcoholism, the bad, the real problem that showed up when I put the drink down, that will be relieved if I seek God. Now stop there. Thanks.
Thank you both. Thanks. All right. The next reading is going to be on page 86. On awakening, let us think about the 24 hours ahead. We consider our plans for the day. Before we begin, we ask God to direct our thinking, especially asking that it be divorced from self-pity, dishonest, or self-seeking motives. Under these conditions, we can employ our mental faculties with assurance, for after all, God gave us brains to use. Our thought life will be placed on a much higher plane when our thinking is cleared of wrong motives. In thinking about our day, we may face indecision. We may not be able to determine which course to take. Here we ask God for inspiration, an intuitive thought or a decision. We relax and take it easy. We don't struggle. We are often surprised how the right answers come after we have tried this for a while. What used to be the hunch or the occasional inspiration gradually becomes a working part of the mind. Being still inexperienced and having just made conscious contact with God, it is not probable that we are going to be inspired at all times. We might pay for this presumption and all sorts of absurd actions and ideas. Nevertheless, we find that our thinking will, as time passes, be more and more on the plane of inspiration. We come to rely upon it.
This part is probably, of all the things I do, I had probably done this, at least the on the awakening part, 90% of the time since I've been sober. It is probably, for me, is like the most important thing that I do in the morning is to do my prayers and meditation in the morning. I very rarely miss it. Now, I will say this. When I was first getting sober, I would get in my car and pray while I was cruising or speeding down the interstate, going to work, smoking cigarettes and going, God help me, mama, you know. And so I'm like, you know. So my sponsor said to me, I told him, I said, you know, I haven't been really doing this the way that you told me to. And he says, yeah, I can, because I can tell you need to tell me that. I already knew. That's like, you bastard. But as I learned how to do this and get up in the morning and take more time to do the stuff I should be doing every day, I was the same way. My experience was that when I was doing the inventory at night and I wake up in the morning, something was different. It always was different. There was some way that the way I was approaching life was just, I mean, it was, and it came on gradually. So the back of the book talks about having a spiritual experience or a spiritual awakening. And when I first got here, I had all these experiences and I thought they were my awakening. That was me. That was happening. And I particularly like this, that I asked my thinking to be divorced of self-pity, dishonest, and self-seeking motives. I don't know about you all, but I am, when I got here, I was filled with self-pity. And I didn't even know what it was. I thought it was depressed. I was just depressed. And I didn't feel right, you know, and I thought it was low self-esteem. And then I heard somebody say that they asked me, they said, do you have any resentments? And I said, well, of course, a lot of people at this meal. And he goes, well, you can't have self-pity. Self-pity implies that everything everybody's done to you, you deserved. if you think you have low self-esteem and self, then, I mean, sorry, you can't, have, I'm sorry, I had low self-esteem is what I thought I had, right? But he said to me, you have self-pity. If you had low self-esteem, you would think that everything that happened to you was your fault, that you deserve what you got. But because you don't, because you have self-pity, you don't think you should have, these things should have happened to you, then you have something in there that says nobody should have screwed with me. And I thought to myself, I said, you know, that's pretty, I was mad about that, but because I didn't think I had self-pity. To me, that sounded too strange. But I think as I've gone on, I come to realize really what that means. And I do. I mean, it's horrible sometimes. And then dishonesty, I'm not nearly as bad as I used to be. And self-seeking is also reduced a lot. And I just love asking God to do these things. I also, up in when we actually read this step, it says we asked God for the power to carry out his will. And I think for me, that this doesn't say that in here, but I always throw that in when I'm doing my prayers in the morning. I ask God to give me the power to do what I'm supposed to be doing because I don't have the power to do it. Because left to my devices, I'd walk around in self-pity and I'd screw people over and I'd lie about it along the way. I mean, that's just the way, that's just how I lived my life before I came to Alcoholics Anonymous. And it has also been my experience that my life is, my thinking is placed on a higher plane and it's cleared of wrong motives. And then down here, it talks about being inspired. You know, we may pay for this presumption, all sorts of absurd actions and ideas. Well, I thought of a story I wanted to tell real quick. I won't give you all the details, but I must have been, I don't know, 10 or 11 years sober. And there was this woman that kept coming into AA and kept getting drunk all the time. I had a sponsor, I had sponsees, I had service job, I had home group, I was doing everything. And this is a February morning. Get up in the morning, I said, I'm gonna go help her. I'm gonna call her on, I'm gonna see her tonight. I'm gonna ask her if I can sponsor her. I'm gonna help her. That's what I'm gonna do. And I convinced myself, I said, oh yeah, I'm gonna do that. So I'd made the decision. I'm cleaning my house up. It was about 11 o'clock in the morning. I get a phone call from this woman who I hadn't seen in 5 years, who had been a member of my home group and moved out to Virginia Beach. And she got on the phone and she says, Donald, I got to talk to you about something. I said, all right. She goes, I know you're concerned about home groups. And I'm, oh, yeah, I am. Yeah. You know, I just called to get your advice. Okay, good, good. I appreciate that. She says, there's this guy in my home group who keeps picking up newcomers, women. And I want to talk to you about that because I don't think that's right. And I went, what? And she told me again, there was a guy that was going around her home group picking up women who were new, brand new. And we talked and talked and talked for about 45 minutes at the end of the night, end of the conversation. I said, Judy, you don't know how much you helped me. And I did not do what I was going to do. And that woman never got sober and it wasn't on me. And so I'm grateful for that. And I was, everybody's got their own path to take. And I can't get myself involved in stuff like that. But that was an example that I had that I was inspired. I thought I was doing the right thing. I can't, yeah, I'll help this woman, you know, but I didn't have clear my, I had not looked at my motives. I thought my motives were good, but underneath this stuff was something that was not quite as pristine as I had wanted it to be or thought it was going to be. And so, you know, the wonderful thing is that I did not do that. And I think I talked to my sponsor about it and I wrote inventory about it. And how is it that I can convince myself of something that is clearly not the case? I'm a smart guy. I know what I'm doing. But I can tell myself all kinds of crazy stuff. So this inventory is really important to do so that I don't go down that road because I've done it in other cases and other times as well. But it is absolutely true that as time goes on, that stuff goes away. And I am cleared. My mind becomes clearer and clearer. And those motives, those underlying motives go away. And things just work. And I rely on it. I rely on getting in touch with the universe in the morning and just moving through it. And it's wonderful. And I doing this in the morning is really the most important thing. I like doing my inventory during the day, and I don't write it at night, but I do it at the end of the night. But it's the spiritual life. I have to live it. I just can't talk about it. I got to live that life. And I didn't know how to do that before I came to Alcoholics Anonymous. So thank you.
My name's Willie. I'm an alcoholic. I like that. Asking that we be divorced from self-pity, dishonesty, and self-seeking motives. Like, what does that mean? I remember telling my sponsor, like, what does that mean? He said, what do you think it means? And I said, I know what it is to be divorced to my ex-wife. I know what that means. And he said, what's that mean? I said, that means I have zero access. like there is just no. He goes, well, that's what you're asking God for, you know? And it's right back to, and it's all the way through this. I'm asking God in the third step prayer, relieve me of the bondage of me. You know, I am my problem. This book the whole way through tells me I am my problem and then tells me what to do about it. And then again, it tells me I am my problem over and over and over again. And then what's it say to do? Take inventory. Over and over and over again. So here we ask God for inspiration and intuitive thought or decision. The first thing I do in the morning is the first thing I do is thank God for waking me up. And I say a little quick prayer. It's kind of like the St. Francis prayer jammed into one sentence. I say, please help me to be sober so I can do whatever it is you need me to do today. Because I cannot drink and be Willie. You know, that is not being sober in my mind. That is just not drinking. So I like I said, I like definitions. Sobriety, definition of sobriety is not how long you've been without a drink. It's the quality of the state of being sober. So if you put it to me that way, I've had some pretty messed up sobriety. I also like spiritual, like because I heard that word, y'all were going to make me kneel in the pews. That's what happened in here. And I got told to look up a definition of it. And it said, not a physical material being, but affecting one's soul. And then way back in the book, it tells me I have to concede to my innermost self that I'm alcoholic. You know, to me, that's my soul, my spirit, whatever you want to call it. So I'm an alcoholic suffering from alcoholism and, you know, took the alcohol away when I walked through the doors here. And I was just left with the ickenism. That's what I had to work with. And I need something to treat that. You know, and affecting one's soul, that happens when stuff like people say, when's the last time you drank? And I go, like that prayer worked. Like I can feel it. Or when some Galloway flies out my mouth, I feel that today. Almost instantly. Like sometimes sarcasm will come out before I can catch it. And I feel it and I just know it's wrong. But it says, we're often surprised how the right answers will come after we've tried this for a while. Where's the part I'm looking for? Being still in experience and just having made conscious contact with it is not probable that we're going to be inspired at all times. We might pay for this presumption in all sorts of absurd actions and ideas. So the longer I'm here, the more I figure out, the less I know. Like, I got to about a year and a half sober and had all my answers. Like, they were there. Like, I'm fixed. I'm good. And God blessed me at about 2.5 years, and I needed someone to say this so I know what happened. But I started having a lot more questions. You know, I like praying for God's will and the power to carry that out. If I'm telling you that I know what God's will is today, that is Willie talking. I have no idea what it is. I have a pretty good idea what it's not. You know, that's the part I try not to do. And I love, this is my favorite step, especially at night. And even in the morning, sometimes when I'm reviewing and I do discuss it with someone, I never know God was in my life until way after the fact. And usually one of you guys have to point it out to me. And I go, You know, like, you know, kind of like a little kid. He does care, you know. My whole life, you know, I wrecked the car when I was 16 drunk. It was my mom's car, broke 8 ribs, collapsed. It was bad, you know. I didn't have to wrestle anymore, but I taught myself how to play guitar. And I get off the school bus, and I thought I could teach myself how to play piano. I could transfer the notes. My mom had that thing, footprints up on, like, in front of her thing. And I'd come home from school, and I'd plunk on the piano, and I'd read it. And at the end, where he asked God, you know, why at the worst times of my life did you leave me? You know, one set of footprints, and God said, I didn't leave you. I carried you. I used to be like, that is awesome. That crap don't happen to me, but that's awesome. And then, you know, fast forward, you know, 25 years, and I get here, and I do the work in here. And then someone points out to me, like, in the middle of a fifth step, like, you are dead on paper almost 50 times there. Do you think you got you through all of that? And that was another, like, I felt it, you know, that affected my soul. Now, you know, where it says, way back, and I keep bouncing back in the book because it got me to this point. But the spiritual life is not a theory. We have to live it. And that's the part I'm talking about. Like I feel when I'm wrong today, like pretty immediately. I remember the first time I actually did what the 10th step said to do, you know, talk to someone immediately. If, you know, do we need to discuss something with once? And I call this guy up. I did something and it was wrong. And I know there's an apology, but I wanted to do what the book said. And I go in the infirmary and I pray and I call this guy and I'm telling him what happened. And he goes, that sucks. And I said, do what? Like, I'm doing the thing. He's like, you don't have alcohol or drugs to blame it on anymore. That is just you. I felt that when he said that. Like, at that point, now I'm back in 6 and 7, kind of. You know, because when I got the 6 entirely ready, have God remove these defects, yeah, I'm ready because that's going to render me white as snow and I get all my stuff back. That's the way I saw it. Now today is when I pray and ask for, I want to get rid of it because it's wrong. Like, I need him to remove that because it's just wrong. And I feel it when it's wrong. And all that comes through just doing this. You know, that I like 12 steps. It says practice these principles in all your affairs. I like the word, I like they use the word practice because they're one day I'm really going to need it. That's why I think they use that word practice. Like, one day I'm just going to need it. So I'll stop there.
Thank you. All right. Next reading is going to be on page 87. Usually we conclude the period of meditation with a prayer that we be shown all through the day what our next step is to be, that we be given whatever we need to take care of such problems. We ask especially for freedom from self-will and are careful to make no request for ourselves only. We may ask for ourselves, however, if others will be helped. We are careful never to pray for our own selfish ends. Many of us have wasted a lot of time doing that, and it doesn't work. You can easily see why.
Donald. Well, I will say this about steps 6 and 7. My experience was exactly the same. And then I found, I heard this someplace, I don't remember exactly where, but like step 6 is I'm ready to have God remove the defects of character, but it's not up to me which get removed. And the problem with that, then I have to live. And the more inventory I do every night, the more I see the same stuff over and over and over again, you know? And then someone said to me, they said, well, maybe this is what you need to give somebody else. Maybe they need this part of you, this stuff that you don't like. And the other thing is that I'm not God. I can't be wiped clean of all this. I have to be awake to it. So freedom from self-will, to me, all those defects of character are me running the show. That's when it happens. So it's really important, I think, that it says, I ask God to give me whatever I need to take care of such problems. And that's part of asking God to give me the power to take care of these things. I will tell you another quick story. It says here, I don't pray for my own selfish ends. Well, because I was so poor when I got here, I had nothing. I mean, nothing. I used to play the lotto all the time, lottery. And I used to say, God, I'll be a great rich person. You know, I'll help people. I'll do all this stuff. God, get, you know, help me win the lottery. Help me to win the lottery. So then I go to this meeting and we're standing out front talking. And this guy says, well, such and such a person just died. And I go, how did he die? And he goes, I don't know. His number came up. And I went, the Virginia lottery. Virginia lottery. Then I want my number. Oh, no. So I stopped praying for the lottery for that. But it does. It wastes a lot of time. And I will tell you one other quick thing. What I also learned is that and my sponsor told me this. He said, you know, don't pray for people when they're sick. Don't ask God to fix them, make them better, because you're not God. You don't know what their path is. You don't know what God has in store for them. My job is to ask God to show me what I can do to be of service to the people that are sick or dying. And that's all I can do. That person's life is up to them. And it took me a long, to him and God, her and God, it took me a while to get my mind wrapped around that. But I started doing it, and I had a friend of mine who got pancreatic cancer. And I was able to help him through all of that stuff. And you know, he's had a really hard time dealing with all of it. And I told him, I said, you know, your job is to help somebody, help people that are going to be left behind. They're going to be people are left behind. You get to go someplace completely new and different. So when you have to pass on, you have to show somebody how it is, how to die with dignity and with sobriety. And that's what your job is. And I was able to help him with that. And he died very peaceful. And I went to the church for the service. He lived up in Tennessee. And the doctor stood up and talked about how great of a guy he was and how he didn't bother anybody. He was helpful to everybody all the way to the very end. And I didn't know Bill was going to do that, but he actually did. And it was just good to hear because he spread that around with other people. That's what we're trying to do, I think. It's not just that I'm trying to say, keep myself sober. I'm trying to bring this program to other people, not in this format, but in my life. How do I live my life? What kind of example am I to other people? How does a sober person live? My grandmother died at 88, and she was sober 88 years. Right? Mm-hmm. And she was the sweetest, nicest person you could ever think of. And I kind of want to be that way. My grandfather was a pain in the ass. He was a pain in the butt. But my grandmother was just an incredibly and wonderful person. And I kind of want to be that kind of person. I don't need to go telling everybody what I do, but I want to be an example of the big book they used to say around here. But at least I want to be a person that they will look up to and come to and ask questions of. And I can do that if I'm doing what this book tells me to do. And this is part of that process. I kind of diverged into something else. I'm sorry, but in any event, go ahead.
That was perfect. My name is Willie. I'm an alcoholic. So it's weird Donald just said all that, right? God incidents. We may ask for ourselves, however, if others are helped. But, you know, he just read it and then I looked over it. We're careful never to pray for one's own selfish ends. Many of us have wasted a lot of time doing that, and it doesn't work. So I said they say practice this because in my mind, one day you're really going to need it. So back in the beginning of April, I got to take a little 9-day vacation in Maryview Hospital. You know, I went there and I thought I was just having stomach problems and I was like really constipated, and the lady touched me and said, "Oh, we need to do a CT scan." About a half hour later, she says, "You're not going anywhere." It's like, why? She's like, you have really bad pancreatitis. And I, you know, it was about 3 weeks leading up to this thing. I'm just thinking this bad stomach's going to go away. So the practices, so you're really going to need it. You know, I was in there for like 3 days. They discharged me. I was home for about 10 hours before I crawled back to the hospital. And so they do more scans, and then they find something, you know, it was kind of big. It was like an abscess, you know, and in my mind, you know, being the alcoholic I am, the good alcohol, I gave myself about 48 to 72 hours to live at that point. And I found out, you know, while I was in there, there's two things I can do while I'm in there. I can spend a lot of time alone with the problem, which is right here. I can do that. You know, I can drift into morbid reflection and hate the world and cuss God, or I can spend a lot of time with God. And then, you know, my first thoughts, why me? You know, like I said, about 48 hours to live from the get-go. I don't even know what it is yet, but, you know, it's over. And I started doing this stuff, and I started, you know, asking him, and I was like, you know, here I am kind of mad at God again, you know, like I was when I was 11, when my dad died, same feeling. And then it hit me, you know, a little under 8 years ago, I was physically trying to drink myself to death with a loaded pistol in case I couldn't. Like, I haven't felt that way in almost 8 years because of this, because of the relationship I have with God that Alcoholics Anonymous gave me. They showed me how to do it. And I was like, and it hit me, you know, if this is the way God sees it fit, I should go. Again, still don't know what it is yet. But in there, it was like a piece, like who am I to beg? God doesn't need my begging. You know, and I'm talking to my family, they're like, we're going to pray for this supernatural healing, this and that. I said, why don't you just pray for God's will? Because that's what's going to happen, whether I want it to or not. You know, I pray for knowledge of it. Like, is this it, buddy? But still, the peace in it, and I don't talk about it a lot because I don't want people to say, well, I don't want to bother him. He might not be bother the hell out of me, because when I'm dealing with your problems, mine are gone, you know. And then further on, I had other tests, and, you know, it's better, but it's still not good, but we still got to do this, but we still don't know what it is, you know. But the peace that came over me through just the prayer and meditation in there, when I did actually, I got to do this on an extended period. Like, I got to have basically a 6-day 11th step in there. And I got to review my life as I would in the 11th step. And, you know, like, God's given me a pretty good 8 years. You know, I love it. I love who I am today. You know, I'm still in here. Old Galloway still flies out of me once in a while. But like selfish ends, I don't even know what it would be at that point to pray for. You know, I love Alcoholics Anonymous. I love being able to walk in here and someone come up and say, hey, can I run this by you? Hell yeah. Because, you know, you just gave me purpose. My purpose is to be maximum service to God and those about us, not maximum service to Willie. Being maximum service to Willie landed me right here. This is the best I could do. But, you know, the prayer and meditation part, we're running out of time. I think I want to, yeah, I'm going to stop there. I'm going to read the next one.
Hey, thank you both. What I'm actually going to do is I'm going to mash the last two readings into one, yeah. Since y'all know how to talk. And I love that. Always the best. All right. Kicking it off on 87. If circumstances warrant, we ask our wives or friends to join us in morning meditation. If we belong to a religious denomination which requires a definite morning devotion, we attend to that also. If not members of religious bodies, we sometimes select and memorize a few set prayers which emphasize the principles we have been discussing. There are many helpful books also. Suggestions about these may be obtained from one's priest, minister, or rabbi. Be quick to see where religious people are right. Make use of what they offer. And continuing on 87, as we go through the day, we pause when agitated or doubtful and ask for the right thought or action. We constantly remind ourselves we are no longer running the show, humbly saying to ourselves many times each day, "Thy will be done." We are then in much less danger of excitement, fear, anger, worry, self-pity, or foolish decisions. We become much more efficient. We do not tire so easily, for we are not burning up energy foolishly as we did when we were trying to arrange life to suit ourselves. It works. It really does. We alcoholics are undisciplined, so we let God discipline us in the simple way we have just outlined. But this is not all. There is action and more action. Faith without works is dead. The next chapter is entirely devoted to step 12.
How much time? Not much. I'll do this as quick as I can here. There's a couple things I want to say real quick. I really do believe, you know, I think the book says that God's will for me is to be happy, joyous, and free. And I really believe that. And I think that that's all I need to know about God's will. And I work for that, towards that on a daily basis. But it's given to me as a gift. It's grace. I don't earn it. I just keep the channel open. And this is how I keep the channel open. Because if I don't, I start blocking myself off from the sunlight of the spirit. And next thing I know, I'm going out thinking crazy stuff, and I'm doing crazy stuff, and I'm drinking again. And to drink is to die. I will definitely, there's no doubt in my mind that'll happen. Where religious people are right, make sure you know, I always have thought that people come here with a lot of set ideas, and what Alcoholics Anonymous will do is open you up so that those traditions that you come here with will be better, more improved. You'll be able to use them a bit better. Because the one thing I don't know how to do as an alcoholic is I'm always about me. I'm always thinking about me. I'm always doing what I want to do. And I think it's always right. It's what I should be doing. And that's never the case. I can't tell you how many times I thought I was mad about one thing. When I wrote inventory, it was actually something completely different. I can't tell you how many times that has happened, almost every time. Manifestations of self, excitement, fear, anger, worry, self-pity, and foolish decisions. That's what I'm going towards. That's what I'm looking at when I'm doing inventory. And it's great that I think excitement leads the list. Because I get all excited about things, I think, you know, I think I'm doing right, everything's going great, and what happens? You know, I'm right back in the same boat again. In the back of the book, AA Comes of Age, is a section called, there are appendices. And Dr. Tebow, who was a psychiatrist in Alcoholics Anonymous for a long time back in the 40s, was doing a workshop in 1955 in St. Louis I won't get into that part. But he's doing this thing, and he says in this little workshop, he says, alcoholics are undisciplined. They do not know how to take a stopping. And I always thought discipline meant I wasn't making my bed in the morning. I wasn't being polite to people. I was undisciplined in my way, but it's my mind that's undisciplined. I can't stop myself. Once I get started on something, I can't stop myself. That's called obsession. That's when I start going and I can't stop, right? And alcoholics do not know how to stop. So when Bill wrote that in there, that we're undisciplined, I always thought it meant I wasn't making my bed in the morning. But in fact, it means that the way I think is undisciplined. And that was an important thing for me to come to realize and understand. And so for me, this is the culmination. The 11th step is what I've learned throughout the entire process of being sober. And now I get a chance in step 12 to live it and carry the message of how to get this to the next person that's coming along. So what's the most important? Is it helping other people or staying sober and improving? I think it's both. But if I had to give my ruthers, I would rather improve my conscious contact with God, because that's going to help me help people even better as time goes on, because that's what this is about. There are people you can help and there are people you can't. That's just the nature of the beast. And I don't know how to do any of those things, but what I do know is what I have to do for myself so I can stay sober on a daily basis. And the book does say that when this stuff doesn't work, you go, you reach out your hand and talk to other people. You reach out, you help people. And that's an important process. But the number one thing for me is making sure that on a daily basis, I get up in the morning and I've done the things I'm supposed to do. And I take my inventory and prayers, what I always heard AA was all about. So sorry, it took too long.
No, you didn't, Donna. Thanks. So I'm going to wrap this up with just an 11-step experience, because I can tell you what I think the book means and stuff. But if I don't tell you how it works in my life, then I'm just telling you if you want to know what the book says, read it. That's what they told me. It's when I do it. So it was about 3 years ago. There was this woman in Suffolk. She was kind of like my little sister. You know, we took races. I had driven her daughter back to Virginia, University of Virginia, Charlottesville. You know, she was just like my little sister. You know, we did a lot of stuff together. During COVID, I took this woman a 5-year medallion, and then stuff changed. She moved up to Newport News, right? So about a year or two later, and we talked. About a year or two later, I'm in my home group down on Centerville, and it said, "Hey, can you come up here? I need someone to talk to." And I said, "Okay." So you know, I wasn't doing anything, so I left my home group, drove up. At the end, I stayed for the meeting, like a good AA. But afterwards, I drove up Newport News, and when I got there, she's crying and drunk. You know, her daughter just found out she'd been drinking, and it was remorseful. And I stayed there for about 2 hours. The first thing I did was when she opened the door and I saw that, there was a quick prayer: "Please remove any selfish thing from me right now." So, you know, and I talked and I said, you know, I learned a lot of what's in this book from you. So you know what I'm going to say to you, blah, blah. If you want to go to a meeting in the morning. So I'm driving home, right? And it hurt. Like, I actually left there and thought, I could see where someone would drink after something like that. Like, just the emotional tie, you know. And I drive home, and I get home, and I inventory it. And, like, what could I have done? Is there anything I could have done better? And I'm praying, you know. And it says in there, it says, you know, the right thought will come to you. And at about 3 a.m, I drifted up like peaceful, went to sleep peaceful. About 3 a.m, like something woke me up. I sat straight up in bed and I went, "You did that for me. Like, you didn't send me up there for her." I was about, 2 weeks from picking up a 5-year medallion. About 3 weeks after that, I was going to go to my great niece's wedding in Pennsylvania, where there was going to be about 150 of me there actively drinking. And like, you know, when I seek God after the fact and I look back on it, he knew I probably wasn't going to help her that night, but he let me know what it looked like after you pick up a 5-year medallion and you drink again. Like, I never know what God has in store to me. Everything happens for a reason, and I usually don't get to know what the reason is, you know? And it's way after the fact, when I seek backwards, when he saw it, that I get relief from him and know that God was in my life. You know, I could talk about prayer and meditation for years, but I keep looking at that clock, and I think we're about ready to go. But I know it is a big part of my life throughout the day. When Willie flies out my mouth, sometimes 6 and 7 kind of looks like, "Where were you on that one, buddy? You know, I thought you took that from me." But when I actively try to make this part of my life, my world goes a whole lot better. You know, they say it's designed for living at work. When you do the stuff in this book and not just read it to finish it, when you actually study it and do the stuff over and over and over again, practice, man, my life goes a whole lot better. You know, on paper, it doesn't, as far as where I work, what I do, all this, that all looks the same as the day before I got sober. But, you know, what changed in me was my outlook on life. I heard a guy say it's my outlook, not outcome. The outcome is up to God. He already knows where I'm going to end up. All I got to do is do the best I can with what I got while I'm here. So thanks.
All right, thank you, Bill.
Have a good day.
We're going to pass the seventh tradition basket. Seventh tradition states every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. Will contributions cover each group's rent and other expenses? The seventh tradition is essential at every level of AA service. It is both a privilege and a responsibility for groups and members to ensure that not only their group, but also their inner group, central office, local services, district, area, and the general service office remain self-supportive. This keeps AA free of outside influences that might divert us from our primary purpose, to help the alcoholic who still suffers. Word about safety. Our group endeavors to provide a safe meeting place for all attendees and encourages each person here to contribute to fostering a secure and welcoming environment in which our meetings can take place. Are there any AA-related announcements?
Rebecca? Hey, Randy?
Awesome.
And that's family friendly too. You bring your kids, they're having trunk or treat.
Awesome. So. I've got a quick one too. This group right here, actually, it won't be in this exact room. It's going to be downstairs back in the normal room. That's on good. Monday, November 3rd, we are going to have a supper and a speaker, 6 p.m. potluck. Please bring a dish if you can. It benefits everybody. And 7 p.m. speaker, it's going to be Jack D from Baltimore, Maryland. It's going to be a wonderful time. Yeah. And there are these beautiful pumpkin themed flyers. And they're probably right over here in one of these totes that I see up to my side. Please grab some, take them to your groups. Simple Actions is a home group. If you're interested in joining our home group or in need of a sponsor, please hang out after the meeting. Home group members, please raise your hands. Awesome. Literature is available. Please see a home group member after the meeting. I believe it's not fully set up, but it is available. All right. Sponsorship in AA is yours for the asking. We urge you, do not delay. If you have questions or would like additional information about sponsorship, I will be available right here at this table after we close the meeting. Please feel free to come talk to me. If you're shy, you can send an email to info@simpleactions.net. Just a couple quick reminders. Smokers, please use the butt can provided and stay well away from the church doors. All meeting audio recordings and upcoming events are posted on our website, simpleactions.net. And the meeting after the meeting, all are invited and encouraged to join us for fellowship at the meeting after the meeting, which will be held at Cafe Stella, just up Colonial Avenue. And just in closing, let's thank our panel one more time. Please, after we close it up, please feel free to come.
My name is David.
David.
Our book is meant to be such events will come to pass for you, countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to Him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.
You have a nice way of closing. Eight on the dot.
Yeah. You can damn speaker.
Yeah.
Come on, listen.
I had to keep chasing.
You can't really do it justice.
Yeah. All right. Moment of silence followed by the Lord. Our Father,
our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on the earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory.